Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, July 28th, 2000. In the Fireside Room this evening, Tom Fuchs presents session number 2004, which is titled Conflict Resolution, Communication, and Management, The Seven Principles of Making Marriage Work. Let's listen in.
Well, I just want to tell everybody who I am. My name is Tom Fuchs. I am from Crookston, Minnesota. I work at the University of North Dakota. I work in a conflict resolution center. Our center is dedicated to helping folks resolve conflicts. We really do three kinds of work. We do mediations, that's between two people. We have a co-mediator model, so we have two mediators and two disputants in the room. That's the first thing. The thing we do is we work with organizations, whether we facilitate them through a conflict process, or sometimes we help them with strategic planning, or really anything. Anytime that an organization needs some help making some decisions, we do that. The third thing we do is we help organizations change their culture to help them understand conflict in a little bit better way, and utilizing the concepts we've really covered over the last 3 days. That's really kind of some of the core pieces we use. It is our concept that conflict, that there's a fundamental experience to conflict, that everybody really pretty much responds to conflict in the same way, and that is conflict makes everybody feel very self-protective and very suspicious of the other person. So we tend to shut down, we get really defensive, and we're very suspicious of other people's motives. And the further we get in terms of conflict, the harder the conflict is, the more suspicious we become, and the harder it is to come back into what we've termed as homeostasis. Today we're going to talk about an interesting corollary studies done with folks who are struggling with marital conflicts. And the real focus of today is working with the books, The Seven Principles of Making Marriage Work. I did ask the bookstore to order it, and if there is one book that I would give any couple getting married today, this would be the book. The Seven Principles of Making Marriage Work. I do have a handout for you, and I will give you that handout in just a moment.
Who's the author, Tom?
John Gottman. John Gottman is a University of Washington professor.
Yeah.
You dog. He is probably doing the most scientific research on why marriages last or don't last. And he's really done some great, great books. He's got some other wonderful books out. The Heart of Parenting, How to Raise an Emotional Intelligent Child. The Analysis of Change, Why Marriages Succeed or Fail, and What Predicts Divorce. So the reason that our center became involved with Gottman and his kind of concepts were the fact that in many ways, what we talk about the fundamental experience, he utilizes. In other words, he has found the same things are at work in marriages that are at work in most conflicts. In marriages, it's a little bit different, and we'll talk about those differences. But that was the real reason why we first started getting into it. In fact, about, I don't know, Pam, how many years ago was it? 3 or 4 years ago? Maybe even longer than that, 5 or 6 years ago, we saw Gottman's work covered in like a 2020 or a 48 hours.
No, it was longer than that. It was probably like 2 years ago.
Time flies. Fine. When you're happily married. About 10 years ago, we saw some information about what he called the Four Horsemen of Divorce, or the Four Horsemen of the Acropolis. And we'll talk about those kind of ideas. I only made 40 copies because I was hoping that some of you would come with your partners and would be able to share. Plus, I'm always aware of resources. So if you'd be willing to share, that would be great. I only do have 40 copies. So.
But you learn still share.
Are they done with that truck yet?
Not yet.
No. Just doing a quick stall here. Pretty close, aren't they?
Let's see. So about 10 years ago, we saw this information on Gottman. we were really intrigued because if you're like Pam and I are, we see a lot of our couples struggling in their relationships, some of them successfully and some of them not successfully. And so we were really interested in what this really meant. A couple of concepts that are going to be close to the concepts we've been working on. We have something called a homeostasis. And I talk about homeostasis, that it's a kind of on a peace and conflict continuum. Oh, I bet they're done. And
don't use red.
Don't use red?
No, can't read it. Black.
How's that? Yeah. We believe that everybody has a homeostasis. And that is, we borrowed that word from Walter Cannon's work in physiology. And it's that fight or flight response. And we're always in a state of readiness. But within this homeostasis, we have all sorts of words and values that we want to be known for, like kind, considerate, caring, understanding. Now, Gottman doesn't use those words, but one word that he does use is called flooding. And that's what he calls the fundamental experience of conflict. In other words, coming out of your homeostasis. He calls that flooding. And it's a really pretty good term if you think about what happens to you emotionally. Whenever you get into a real conflict, you come out. You sort of leave all of the good problem-solving skills you have, and you kind of venture out into a place that's really pretty confusing and pretty hard. And it's, you get very suspicious and very protective of your own place of being. And then you have to slowly work to come back there. And we talked about empowerment and recognition. So I'm going to start. Gottman was the man who developed this concept. And I'd encourage you to buy this book because it's got some great activities in it. And we'll work through some of them today. He developed this love lab. It's on Montlake, and he's got sensors and video information or video screens, and then he's got what's called a Holter monitor, which measures blood pressure and heart rate, and he invites couples to live in this little love lab for 24 hours. Now, what he began to look at is he thought that, marriages, we are in a really major crisis. You have a 67% chance of getting divorced in the first 40 years of marriage. 40 years of marriage. 67% in the first 40 years. Half of those are within the first 7 years. So if you can get over the 7 years, you have a little bit better chance, but half of that 67% happened in the first 7 years. Second marriages are even worse. It's 10% higher, so it's 77% chance of being divorced over 40 years. So he began to look at what was it all about, and why do... there's a lot of statistics out there right now about happy marriages. People who are in marriages live longer. I always think of that old joke. Somebody always said it only seems longer. But it's true. People who are happily married live longer, have less stress, have less chronic illness than people who are divorced. And he began to look at why was that. And he says there's really two reasons. One of them is that unhappy people have, it's a physiological response to stress, that there's more heart attack and there's more high blood pressure, heart disease, even cancers. There's also a psychological, there's more anxiety, depression, suicide, violence, psychosis, homicide, substance abuse in both unhappily married people and unmarried people. So he really began to look at what sort of things make people satisfied in marriages and really what works. Because there's a lot of myths out there about what makes marriage last or not last. And it's kind of amazing. They actually even did studies on on the blood cell counts of happily married people, and happily married people have a higher white blood cell count, which is a major immune issue. So, let's see. He also looked at kids, and kids from unhappily married or marriages that weren't happy had a high level of school failure and truancy. And then he also looked at kids from unhappy divorces, and they really had the same rate. And so his state was, or his understanding was, don't stay in an unhappy marriage for your children, because it's not any healthier for them to be in an unhappy marriage than it is for them to be in an unhappy divorce. Marriage therapy overall is very, very poor in terms of its success rate. It has a less than a 20% success rate. One of the major ideas that they teach people is active listening. And active listening is all about understanding people's where they're at without understanding anything about homeostasis. In other words, you really have to be pretty much of a saint to be able to hear what your spouse is saying when you're coming out of your homeostasis, or when you're really flooded, as he calls it. And he says it just doesn't work. And he says conflict resolution will not make marriages succeed. He states that marriages and the problems within marriages are overwhelmingly the issues that people argue about are unsolvable. They're really unsolvable. An example would be, I don't care about money. Money is not an issue for me. If I have checkbooks, I have money. That's a perfect thing. I mean, I've never balanced my checkbook. Pam, on the other hand, is a very good money manager. And we have been able to successfully negotiate that relationship, but I will never be good at dealing with money. I mean, it's a given. You could send me to all the check balancing schools in the world that I still would not be very good at. Another myth is that neuroses or personality problems ruin marriages. And he says that overwhelmingly that has nothing to do with why marriages break up. One of the ideas is that common interests make people stay together. And he states a fact, if you're into kayaking, sea kayaking, and if you're both out there kayaking, and if one person is really doing some of the four horsemen or some of the real criticism, contempt, withdrawal, all those things, that it doesn't matter. Even if you have common interests, if you're not at it together, you can still be headed for a divorce. Another one he said is that a lot of myths about marriages is, if you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. In other words, if we can just work out equitability in our marriage, I'll watch the children today, you put the child to get to sleep tonight, tomorrow we'll do this and I'll do that, I'll balance the checkbook, you bring in the money. I mean, all of those things that you do. Really, he said that he finds that couples who are really into this, well, I did this yesterday, in other words, keeping track of that, really are in many ways headed towards divorce, because they're kind of keeping track so tightly of, and aren't reading their partner's needs, okay, of what that partner needs at any one time. So, and he said, that it's kind of that quid pro quo, you do this and I'll do that. It's really kind of an unhappy marriage. Another thing he says is that there's that myth that avoiding conflict will ruin your marriage. And he's found out that it really doesn't. There are some couples who don't dialogue at all and still have a happy marriage. There are some couples who avoid just about every fight and still are happily married. And so he began to explode these myths and say, no, it has nothing to do with that. He begins to look at divorce from the principles which you have stated on your handout right there. He says that there's really kind of these signs that are out there that he can tell usually within about 5 minutes of whether or not a marriage will last. And as I've read this book and reread this book and am starting to watch the people that I am in love with, in the, my friends, my relatives, I can see some of the same things in some of the people, and I'm beginning to be kind of worried about certain, some of my relatives. I have a brother-in-law and sister who I'm worried because I'm starting to see these things jump up. The first one, I'm going to jump back just a little bit. What he says overall is that marriages are based on deep friendships. Now, if we could just show you how to create a deep friendship, that's really what marriages are based on. So that's what he looks for. And we'll get into that in a little bit. One thing I want to recognize is that this marital conflict handout that I gave you is a piece that we use in divorce mediation. Mitch, you don't have one, do you?
Thank you.
Does anybody else not have one? I still have a few copies.
Okay.
You want to send a couple over there? A few more.
You want to grab one?
Maybe share as much as possible. The handout that I'm giving you is something we use in divorce mediation. And so the whole handout is not based on how do you improve your relationship, but what are the signs of divorce. So I want to state that, and I really do encourage you to buy the book. I think if there's one book that you should buy when you're here, it's that book. So Gottman says that it's really deep friendship that makes all the difference in the world. And he originally came out with the four horsemen of the Acropolis. The four horsemen are under the second sign. It says criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. And that was really sort of the crux of all of his research in the beginning. And then later he found out that with those, understanding those concepts, he could only do it about 82% accuracy of whether or not they would be divorced. And he began to find one more real big thing. And that is that couples' secret weapon, what they utilize more than anything, even if they have some of those things in their relationship, is called repair attempts. In other words, you utilize humor to sort of come back out of what is starting to be a real kind of a conflict, or, you know, one person all of a sudden sticks their tongue out or acts like, you know, they're 4-year-old or whatever that repair attempt is. And every couple that is successful, he says, has those repair attempts. In other words, they recognize when they're moving into conflict and can repair it or acknowledge it and then keep moving forward. So that, and then once he figured that out, he came up with a 90 or 92% accuracy in terms of marriages. So the signs of divorce is he says harsh startups are the first one. Harsh startups begins with criticism and sarcasm, and in the form of contempt. I'm just kind of lost here because I'm trying to make sure I get everything through here. An example would be if a person was working on a man and a woman were fighting about housework, and the woman said, you know, I want to talk about your lack of housework, or then the person, the dad was there, the father would say, well, you know, what do you want to talk about? And she would say something like, your lack of, you know, it's about really coming on hard and fast. I'm not sure how to best explain it, but it's like, They're well-worn patterns of conflict, and you sort of jump on every kind of issue, and you hit it really hard, and it's really harsh. And he says that if he sees that's kind of an indicator that something's wrong, that something's going on. He says 96% of the time you can predict the outcome after the first 3 minutes of a conflict, and he's actually questioned the couples, and they could predict where those things were going. So 96% of the time, you can figure it out. So if you have a harsh startup, you can sort of figure out where that conflict's going to end. It's going to end hard and separated. Okay. His second one was the Four Horsemen, which was what I say was at the heart of what he was talking about. Criticism. It's sort of cutting down your mate's character or personality. It's a pretty wild thing to see the criticism or that whole thing come about. The way you change a complaint to a criticism is just add, what's wrong with you? You know, it's that attacking the person. You know, you promised to fill up the car with gas. Why haven't you done it? That's a complaint. You know, why can't you remember anything? I've told you 1,000 times to fill up the car with gas. That's a criticism. You know, that's jumping on their personality. And they're saying, you aren't capable of it. In other words, they're criticizing you as the person rather than complaining. What's that?
It's a homeostasis thing.
Right. So what it does is it pushes people right out of their homeostasis, because those are fighting words, you know, and then you get triggered. All of these are homeostasis one. The next one is contempt. Actually, I was doing that wrong. That was contempt, the second horse. Whoops. Yeah. Couples who are contemptuous with each other, they are more apt to have a lot of illnesses. They get sicker much quicker. It just gets to be a raw kind of setting. And if you recognize it in your relationship, then that's really the first step. And Gottman started to talk about that, and he said that it wasn't always good to just understand it was in there. He actually has come up with, in this book, 7 principles of how do you change that. So it's not good enough just to recognize it. We have to know how to change it. Defensiveness is kind of that when you feel like you're being attacked and all of a sudden you go on the defensive and you start to change the subject. Well, da 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 da. Well, you never do this or this or that. You know, washing the car. You know, you wash the car. I always wash the car. Why don't you ever wash your car? Well, you know, it's hard for me to wash the car. Well, I don't care if it's hard for you to wash the car. You know, you need to take care of the stuff you own. You know, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, you don't take care of the garage. You don't take care of your tools in the shop, and so you start to get defensive and put up all those barriers. Once again, you're trying to protect yourself. You're trying to stay in this area, and you're not trying to come out. And it's just one more sign that something's going to happen. Stonewalling. Amazingly, 85% of the time, men are the stonewallers in marriages. 85% of the time. Gottman says that it's biological. He says that men and women respond differently to conflict, having to do with nurturing and evolution. That when men come out of their homeostasis, when they get flooded, when they have a fundamental experience, take longer to regain their heartbeat and everything else. They haven't done any really repair attempts, but it takes them longer to get back there. It takes them longer to settle down. Women, on the other hand, had biological sense to be able to calm quicker, because children do not handle it as well, and they were majorly in charge of taking care of children. Women who breastfeed their children, if they are upset, the child will not breastfeed, and that's because children are very intuitive and they recognize that they're upset. So he says that men stonewall, that they don't want to get involved, and sometimes will just disengage from the whole argument because they're not willing to go there. I mean, for the lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Do you recognize it, guys? Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I recognize it. I sometimes when something hard comes up, I'm just like, oh, I gotta go out the garage. You know, I mean, that's just a way of backing off. The third sign is flooding. I've talked about that already. That's simply when you become overwhelmed and you come out of your homeostasis. We've talked about empowerment and recognition. Now, that can work in marriages, but when you're when you suffer a fundamental experience, when you come out of your homeostasis, your ability to talk rationally, to hear the other person, that takes a while. I mean, that's a hard thing to do. And so if you can avoid being flooded or flooding the other person in a relationship, then you'll do much better in understanding what's going on.
Kind of splitting, like saving things up, you know what I mean? Like kind of saying, well, you know, I'm mad about this, and then also let me mention this and this and this. I mean,
that would be more like defensiveness. Flooding is just that feeling you get when you know you're going there, and there's nothing you can do. It's an emotion. It's a physiological response. It's tears. It's anger. It might include some of that baggage stuff. You know, you dump out all of your other hurts as you get out. But it is this feeling of coming out. Body language is another wild thing that body language is, you know, that's just that physiological response. So Gottman separated the fundamental experience, flooding, from the body language, the physical response. And I'm not sure why he did that. The last sign is the failed repair attempts. Failed repair attempts are the one person will make a joke, or, and I talked about repair attempts earlier, you know, that idea that one person will sort of throw out that little bit of a bone to, yeah, to kind of smooth things over, and it's not picked up by the other person. Okay, and that's what he sees as a real definite sign that marriage is really struggling, when the attempts go unfulfilled. In other words, the other person doesn't pick it up or doesn't pay any attention to it, because that means the fight goes on. Okay. I think everybody can pretty much recognize some of all of this in our own persons. Questions about it? I know I'm going through really quickly. Are there questions about it? Yeah.
Do these signs, is this statistical, like these signs actually lead to 91% of people divorcing, or is this people who have the potential to get back on track?
Say that again.
The people who, 91% of the people who follow these signs, they divorce and it's over? Or are these people who are struggling and have a chance to go through counseling and get
that? He runs marriage sessions, and this book will help you get on track if you recognize this. This is how he predicts divorce. This is what he looks for. And he's gotten to the point now where he can tell in about 5 minutes just by watching the dialogue. But does that help you? So it's like, it's not as though your marriage is doomed if you see these things happening in your relationship, but we'll move into the next part, which is how do you save your marriage, or how do you sort of help build your marriage back? The sixth sign is bad memories. Marriages that, and he asks them some questions, you know, he interviews them, and marriages that are going down the tubes have rewritten their whole history. So they can't remember the positive things about their marriage, about their dating, about their getting along, about their meeting. And they've completely rewritten their history. In an earlier session, I was talking about my senses is that married couples, like all organizations and all people, have a homeostasis that's shared. And what happens is that the long come the four horsemen, failed repair attempts, body language, flooding, boom, the homeostasis comes down, is reestablished, but there's more conflict. Boom, and it just keeps marching down. And they never quite get back to where they were. Okay? And in the end, there's so much conflict in their relationship that it's easier to get a divorce, which is a gut-wrenching thing. I mean, I work with divorce mediations, and it's gut-wrenching. It's one of the ones that even I, as a conflict resolution person, want to avoid. I mean, I don't even... they ask me to do divorce mediations, and I do them, but reluctantly, because it's really hard. It's hard on me, my psyche. So, but the bad memories, they've completely rewritten everything they know. And they've lost it all. And one of the ways that he says that he can figure out whether or not a marriage is savable is if there is some pieces of fond memories. You know, if there's something to work from. But if they've completely rewritten their history, his point is that possible, yes, but probable, no. So, kind of a scary sight, if you think about it. He talks about one of the things he says is that, you know, one of the signs was that marriage, that affairs cause divorce. And he says that marriages or divorces are just symptoms of couples growing apart. And another sign that he said was that, you know, men aren't biologically built for marriage. We've all heard that, right? You know, men are supposed to be going out and impregnating as many women as possible, have many children to go on. You know, that's... And what he says is that the actual marital affairs for young women are currently higher than men. And he says that it's more of opportunity than it is gender. People's ability to get out and do those sorts of opportunities. And as women have entered the workforce, it has changed. So you probably are tired of this because you want to know, okay, what are we going to talk about? When are we going to talk about the positive stuff, right? the seven principles, really kind of the heart of what I'd love to talk about in the next 20 minutes is the fact that Gottman says it doesn't have to be this way. You know, if you simply take some steps to kind of encourage your marriage, and if you've had a strong beginning, and if you've not rewritten that history, then you really can make your marriage stronger. And so this book isn't about people whose marriages are on the rocks. This book is a book for everybody. His first one is enhancing your love maps. He says that people who are divorced or divorcing know very little about their spouse, very little about their loves, their hates, their the major events in their lives, their history, their favorite everything, their religions, their spouse's fantasies. They're really sort of, they disconnect. And he says that strong marriages have strong love maps. So I'm going to give you a test right now, and it's right out of this book, but it's all true and false. So you should... And I won't require anybody to tell me what your answers are, so don't worry about that. If you're sitting with your spouse, you probably don't want to watch each other do this. So does everybody have a piece of paper and a pencil? No? Isn't that kind of a bummer? There are some pencils up here. I also, who needs pencils? You can do it right on the paper. You want to hand those over to me? Also, I'm supposed to let everybody know that these tapes are available at the bookstore. So you can order these tapes. The tapes that I'm doing. These sessions.
There's a whole box of them there.
Here's another pen. Somebody need a pen?
Yeah.
Oh, there's pencils on the chair over there. Thank you.
That's why Dr. Fantastic is.
This is a question on love maps. Okay, all true and false. First one, I can name my partner's best friends. True or false? You can do it with boyfriends. You can do it with loved ones. Okay.
All or no?
I can name my partner's best friends. True or false? Everybody ready? Second one, I can tell what stresses my partners is currently facing. Number three, I know the names of some of the people who are irritating my partner lately. that might include you.
Yeah.
Number four, I can tell you some of my partner's life dreams. Number five, I'm very familiar with my partner's religious beliefs and ideas. That must be a free one if you're at Holden. Number six, I can tell you about my partner's basic philosophy of life. Number seven, I can list the relatives my partner likes least. Number eight, I know my partner's favorite music. Number nine, I can list my partner's three favorite movies. Number 10, my spouse is familiar with my current stresses. Number 11, I know three of the most special times in my partner's life. Number 12, I can tell you the most stressful thing that happened to my partner as a child. Number 13, I can list my partner's major aspirations and hopes in life. Number 14, I know my partner's current worries. Number 15, my spouse knows who my friends are. Number 16, I know what my partner would do if he or she suddenly won the lottery. Number 17, I can tell you in detail my first impressions of my partner. Number 18, periodically I ask my partner about his or her world right now. Number 19, I feel my partner knows me pretty well. And number 20, my spouse is familiar with my hopes and aspirations. Count your T's up, your true's up. If you have 10 or more truths, then you're doing pretty well. If you have less than 10, you're probably an area you need to work on. You understand what it is? It's about getting connected with your partner. It's about understanding what their hopes are, what their dreams are, what their stresses are, who their loves are. This causes quite a bit of conversation, doesn't it? The second one that he talks about is nurturing, fondness, and admiration system. Okay? Nurturing your fondness and admiration. If there is a fondness and admiration system, a marriage is always savable. That's about a history rewrite. Remember I talked about it earlier, if you've rewritten that history. So 94% of the couples who put a positive spin on their marriage are likely to have a happy future as well. In other words, if you think happy about your past, you will be creating a happy future. In many ways, fondness and admiration, they are like an antidote for contempt. Because if you have contempt in your relationship, then you will fight more, you'll continue to flood each other, and so on and so forth. You'll drag out all the four horsemen of the Acropolis. You want to take one more test? You want to see if you have fondness and admiration? Yes.
Is it common, or what is the likelihood, or what is kind of the situation about people maybe rewriting the other way? Focusing on the positive sides of their past relationship. Of earlier parts of the relationship, instead of rewriting it towards a negative.
Then they rewrite it towards a positive. I would think that it makes it just more chance that marriage or that relationship
will. Is that a common thing? Is that kind of
terrible? No, generally, most marriages start out positive and move towards the negative. Very few marriages start negative and move towards the positive.
So more than likely that rewrite hasn't really happened. It's always still
going to be right. And this is just American U.S.
This currently is just American U.S.
Yeah, like I say, I'm sorry,
we're
in the right now that wouldn't work.
What's that?
The husband and the wives usually don't know each other very well in
other countries. Yeah.
They don't even go to the same wedding, you know.
Wow. All right, we're going to take one more. This is on fondness and admiration. Another time is 20 questions. Same concepts.
What page are you on,
sir? I am on page 66.
So, brought their books. Good.
This is here in the States.
Fondest admiration. I can easily list the three things I admire most about my partner.
Say it again.
I can easily list three things I admire most about my partner. Number two, when we're apart, I often think fondly of my partner. Just true or false? Sometimes doesn't work with this. Number three, I will often find some way to tell my partner I love you. Number four, I often touch or kiss my partner affectionately. Number five, my partner really respects me. Number six, I feel loved and cared for in this relationship. Number seven, I feel accepted and liked by my partner. Number eight, my partner finds me sexy and attractive. I love it when my wife is in the room.
She didn't have to get over it. She had to pause to you, Tom. Yes, she did. Yes, she did.
Number nine, my partner turns me on sexually. Number 10, there's fire and passion in this relationship. Number 11, romance is definitely still part of our relationship.
Still.
Number 12, I'm really proud of my partner. Number 13, my partner really enjoys my achievements and accomplishments. Number 14, I can easily tell you why I married my partner. Number 15, if I had to do it all over again, I would marry the same person. Number 16, we rarely go to sleep without showing some love and affection. Number 17, when I come into the room, my partner is glad to see me. Number 18, my partner appreciates the things I do in this marriage. Number 19, my spouse generally likes my personality. And number 20, our sex life is generally satisfying. On this one again, it's 10 or higher, 10 or lower. 10 or higher, this is an area of strength in your marriage because it shows that you value each other highly. You have a shield to protect your relationship. So what Gottman does is basically moves back out and builds empowerment and recognition. Awareness of yourself and recognition of the other person. But Gottman does it by enhancing your love maps, by identifying the nurturing admiration and fondness. Turning towards each other instead of away is about, you notice how some relationships and some marriages, he says some of the best things for him to watch are the things that would end up on the cutting room floor of any movie. It's the chatting and the talking and the normal, regular kind of paying attention to each other and turning towards each other. He says that in marriages where they turn away from each other, one goes off and golfs, then comes back, takes care of the kid, the other one runs to the shopping center, comes back, the other one goes out with the buddies, that he says that he finds the most, that marriages are strongest when there's a strong kind of a conversation and a paying attention and just the little subtleties of life. That's a strong sense. And this book, once again, has some stuff that talks about how do you do that. This book is really, it's kind of like a how-to book. It's got a lot of exercises in it. And if you find that as a deficiency or one of these areas as a deficiency, you can simply cover that chapter. And it has tests and it has activities that you can do to strengthen your relationships. And all relationships can be strengthened. I mean, no relationship is perfect. And so I'd encourage you to do it. Letting your partner influence you is one of the areas where there is a really a hard thing. And when influence and the ability that each partner has to influence, and he was parodied on Saturday Night Live and on Rush Limbaugh and Politically Incorrect with Phil Mayer. And so I figure anybody that's been picked on by those people is a good guy. That's my idea. But it's that idea that men and women allow influences. In other words, an example of if I found a car that I really liked, before I bought that car, even if we were talking about buying a car, Pam and I would show it to Pam, we would drive it, we would talk it over. In other words, to allow that sort of thing to work in your relationship, that you never sort of take it on by yourself. Influence is an important thing, because it happens that if you don't allow that influence to move in your life, you tend to sort of start to make all decisions, and then some defensiveness comes along, and there could be criticism, and all those other components begin to work. See, and it all seems to work together. When I read this book, to me, it seems pretty yada. I mean, it seems pretty common sense, but what Gottman has done is he's really the first person that has scientifically said, okay, why do some marriages last and other marriages fail? And he's got pretty strong scientific case for all of these ideas. And less than 20% of, and this is the book that he uses when he does the trainings now, less than 20% of the people that come in, do their marriages fail? Okay. So, you know, my sense is that most marriages, I mean, you don't get married to get divorced. You get married to stay married. And if you can do anything to help you, then you do it. And so, questions about what I've talked about, or I've covered it really quickly. Go ahead, Mitch.
I'm looking fairly clear on what a love map is.
The love map is about knowing your partner intimately, knowing those connections and understanding what kind of stresses they're under and what sort of, it's about a physical connection, it's about a mental connection, it's about paying attention. The example that he used was that he had a guy that he brought in whose name was, he called it Rory, and Rory was a pediatrician, and Rory could not name the family dog. Did not know where the back door of the house was. Did not know his kids' friends. You know, they were over in the house all the time. Okay? So that is at its worst. Okay? Yeah, hopefully. I do know where the back door is now. Does that make sense, Mitch? Does that help? So it's all about what are the connections, and do I know what's stressing each other out? Am I paying attention to that person's homeostasis? Okay. Do I know what those words are? You know, do I know who her friends are or his friends are? That's all part of that love map.
There's a fuzziness around the term stonewalling for me, because you talked about the biological differences between men and women, how you resolve problems, right?
Uh-huh.
And yeah. I have understood that as a healthy thing to as a male response, and I certainly it works with me, is to walk away from it before the flooding occurs. Mm-hmm. That's not stonewalling, I don't think.
If you come back to it.
If you come back to it.
That's the difference. Because when stonewalling gets to be too much, and I think the reason why men stonewall is because we don't want to come out. I mean, I agree with you. I think that men overwhelmingly, we don't want to feel that sort of edgy stuff right there, or even further down. But what happens when it starts coming out is that you can walk away, but if you don't make an attempt to go back and repair it, then that's a stonewall. Mm-hmm. So there's a difference between actualizing it and stonewalling.
Mm-hmm. Well, the way you phrase that, then what you're saying, that women like to come out?
Well, I'm not saying that either. I think women do a better job of coming, of biologically responding to it and coming back in. You know, women are better at coming back in back into this, or at least having their heart rate sort of settle down and feel good. They may not be back in, but they aren't as physiologically. The physiology is different in terms of repair. And in fact, one of the strange tests that they've done is that if a man is mad at something, and an hour later somebody says, "We should go get that guy," men will go. Their heart rate goes up. They get pumped up about retaliation. Women's heart rate goes up even higher than the initial event because they don't desire the retaliation. They desire to sort of keep it smoothed over. And so women respond differently when it's brought up to do retaliation. Does that make sense? Men stayed longer in a physiological arousal state and go back there much easier. So, and unfortunately, it was a really good response when we were being chased by saber-toothed tigers. It is not a very good response when we're being chased by our spouse. Truly. Truly, it isn't. It isn't. Any other questions? It's a good book. I encourage everybody to own it. I just think that if you're interested in maintaining your relationship, stop looking at the myths, start looking at what makes sense, and all of this stuff makes sense, and there's some great exercises in there. So, I'm done! One thing I do want to say is that I didn't cover all of those 7 principles.